Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Being up to 90 isn't real. The protein in our range is. Get real.
Yes, a big thank you to Laura Fox for another entertaining evening on this Monday afternoon. I am Shane Dawson. It's Valentine's Day, and if sport is your one true love, well, you've come to the right place. It's another busy hour here on Game On. Between now and 7 o'clock, I'll be joined by Murray Kinsella in studio as we pick through that Irish defeat in Paris. We have Niall Moran, we've Shane McGrath on the Hurling Heroes of the weekend, and Jeff Shepherd on the LA Super Bowl with a Hollywood ending. Plus, Alan Colley is in studio a little bit later on, as Liverpool make sure the Premier League title race isn't quite over yet. And indeed, we'll be looking back on the President's Cup final in Tala on Friday evening that Alan was present for. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game on 2FM.
Yes, it is great to have your company this Monday evening, wherever you are tuning in from. And I'm delighted to have the company of Murray Kinsella in studio. Murray, I mentioned in my intro there that it is Valentine's Day, and if a sport is your one true love, this is the place to be. And the city of love is Paris, but it just wasn't to be for the Irish rugby team at the weekend.
No, well, I'm delighted to spend my Valentine's evening with you, Shane, so that's a pleasure. But no,
I'm not sure your wife would agree with that, but however.
She's waiting for me at home. It wasn't the outcome that Ireland were looking for, certainly, but it ended up being a performance that they took a lot of encouragement from. At one stage of the first half, it looked like France were going to rack up a big win, really. They were dominating up front. Their forwards had an edge. They got into that 19-7 lead and then made it 22-7 early in the second half. And you're really feared for Ireland. But suddenly, an Andrew Porter breakdown turnover, and they get back into the game and they score two tries and really pushed France close. It was a nervy ending, an incredible occasion over there, and the French supporters were certainly a little bit nervous. So yeah, bad outcome. They got a losing bonus point and they're still in the hunt in the championship.
Yeah, I suppose that is. It's, look, no one's pressing the panic button just yet. We have one win, we have one defeat. It's not make or break, but where to next in terms of how Andy Farrell picks this group of players up, and in terms of how the players will look amongst themselves as to where to next and how they get over this defeat and regroup? Because looking ahead, I suppose it is, you have the week off and then the easier of the fixtures with Italy, on paper at least anyway. So what will be going through those guys' heads, I suppose, over the next few days and indeed during that week off?
So firstly, they've got to learn from what went wrong in Paris. The breakdown was a big one. I think we all saw the number of turnovers and key moments that France had there, both with their counter-rucking and their ability to get over the ball and win those turnover penalties. It was crucial. And that was a bit of a template, I suppose, for other teams who play Ireland now, because they couldn't get that flow in their attack that we've seen over the course of, say, November and in that Wales match. So they'll absolutely look at that. They'll look at some of the ways that they kicked out of their own half. They probably invited a bit of pressure from France with that. Even if you think of the very first try of the game, Ireland probably don't get a great kick down the left-hand side, and then they allow France to take a quick line out, and suddenly you're 7-0 down and then 10-0 down, and you're working your way back into the game. So that kind of stuff will be huge for them. They did get some of that momentum with their attack in the second half, and that was a really pleasing part of it, that they were able to score three tries. Obviously a Mac Hansen opportunistic score kept them in touch in the first half, and it was a really important moment against the run of play. A brilliant bit of skill from him, and great to see him get his first test try. But in the second half, they did manage to string a few more passages together, and it was great to see them, I suppose, find a bit of a solution there. So loads to learn from it. Yeah, absolutely. Going into Italy, there'll be, I suppose, licking their wounds, but there's loads to play for. They had a bonus point in the first match against Wales. France obviously are still on track for a grand slam, but they've got to go away to Wales and Scotland next and play England at home in the final match. So Ireland will be hoping for a slip up there, and they've got to do a really professional job against Italy, rack up as many points and tries as possible, and really keep themselves in that fight.
I was reading on the42.ie, I was doing my homework earlier on today, and a couple of very informative pieces from yourself, Murray, and I'm not just trying to butter you up because it's Valentine's Day and the two of us are here just sharing a studio, but you mentioned kind of the breakdown, and Ian Henderson talked about that as well. But some of the other quotes, I suppose, James Ryan mentioned ill-discipline, really, or indiscipline in terms of decision-making as well. And I want to also ask about that penalty decision. I suppose in hindsight, it's a great thing, and it's easy for us sitting here in a nice, warm, cosy studio to say, oh, he should have chosen something different. Do you feel if the captain was different, it might have been a different decision?
I hope we get a chance to ask Johnny Sexton at some stage. He'll probably say, no, I would have gone with James Ryan's call, which, you know, stick with what the team have gone for in the heat of the moment. I have to say, at the time, during the match, I was actually writing my match report and I tapped in just a sentence saying they went into the corner in the 72nd minute. I just presumed that they would. Given what we've seen from this team in the past, I think, yes, that's probably been when Johnny Sexton has been on the pitch. He loves to go for that killer blow and they've got reward from that in the past. In this instance, they felt they would get another opportunity, I suppose, to attack later in the game, and that just didn't come until the very final minute when they got a turnover from Ian Henderson on the restart, and then they kind of had to make a Hail Mary pass over the top, went forward and was knocked on, an opportunity gone. So I personally think they should have gone into that corner at that moment. You know, you're in the 72nd minute, there's still a little bit of time left there, but there's no guarantee you're going to get down the pitch and have another prime opportunity like that 5 metres out. The lineup before, they had just lost. I think there was a bit of nervousness around that area of their game. But remember, they did score 2 tries off lineup platforms in the French 22 in the second half of the game. And I would have loved to have found out what would have happened if they'd gone into the corner.
I suppose it's a very easy question to ask as well. And there was so much chat and the narrative surrounding the build up to this and the press and amongst fans, amongst everyone was, oh God, Johnny out, Joey in, first Six Nations star, first appearance in the 2019 World Cup, etc., etc. Would the result be any different if Johnny Sexton was playing and was starting?
I suppose he's the most important player in the Ireland team, yes. But the way the first half went, it would have been very hard for him to have a huge influence because Ireland weren't getting that front foot ball. They weren't getting the speed of breakdown that has allowed them to play particularly well. I think some of the kicking was probably a little bit hit and miss, and maybe that's one area where he would have helped. A couple of the contestable high kicks were a little bit long. One of them was a little bit short, and maybe they didn't get quite the return that they could have got in that area of the game. But overall, I think Joey Carver did really well. And again, that's one of the encouragements that Ireland take out of the game. He defended well, he made his tackles, and that's been an area where maybe there was a little bit of doubt, but he was excellent in that area. He actually darted at the line a couple of times himself when they did get moving forward and played a few lovely passes as well. Had those two excellent kind of touchline conversions from wide and left, and generally just looked quite assured and confident. And that was as encouraging as anything, because you want him to be, I suppose, that dominant figure when he's playing there at 10. And I, you know, it'll be great to see him get another start against Italy, building on that, getting a bit of momentum in his own game, given the number of games and number of months that he's missed from his rugby career through injury. So that was a positive, certainly, for Ireland, his performance.
So regardless of Johnny's fitness, Joey should start against Italy?
I think so. I think Sexton will, according to Ireland, he will be back fit for it. I think he could maybe come off the bench. Now, obviously, he'll want a game under his belt before they go away to England and play that important fixture. But I think there's so much to be gained from Carberry getting more exposure. And I think he's also shown now that he's well capable of directing that team.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose a couple of other injury problems. Kelleher with the shoulder. Herring is back training, so Herring and Sexton are kind of similar on the way back, and now we're unsure of what the situation with Ronan Keller and
yeah,
the shoulder injury
that's
is
to be established. He took a big blow in the first half, but again, Dan Sheehan came off the bench, a guy who's relatively fresh to test rugby but has been really impressive in every outing. I thought he was again in Paris. Obviously not perfect, he's still learning, but his dynamism, his pace, his power, that incredible try-saving tackle on Jaminet towards the end, it was just emblematic of what he can do and the ground he can cover at a very high speed. So he's an exciting player, and if it is to be him in Italy, I think he's deserved that start and that opportunity. James Lowe also kind of under the radar back in training at Leinster, and that'll be of interest to Ireland because he's been brilliant for them recently as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And on the flip side of that, unfortunately, Kieran Frawley out now for a few weeks with a facial injury, which is unfortunate because he's been going so well recently. You mentioned the positives, and I know we talked about it at the start as opposed to where to now, but you mentioned Matt Canson's great try, and you know, looking at that, I was like, geez, that must be from his great GAA background. Because I know so many people are crediting Shane Horgan, and remember that try in Croke Park with his GAA background, but perhaps not for Matt, but he's been absolutely flying it, which is great to see. But Andy Farrell mentioned after the match that he was unbelievably pleased, was the quote, with his side's character. So yes, we've talked about where to now, but from a management point of view, yes, it's not the right result, obviously, and it's disappointing to come away with a loss in any competition, but in terms of how they went about it and the character, do you agree with that statement, I suppose?
Yeah, absolutely. They could have done things better in this game, but compared to, say, 2020, if you remember, they went away to Paris in the kind of rescheduled games of the Six Nations, and they were well beaten, in my opinion, in that game. It felt so different at the weekend. They really rattled France, as I said, in the second half. And to build back in from that really worrying position just after halftime was a credit to the side's ability to kind of stay in the fight. And that's something that Farrell has spoken a lot about, working on the mental resilience of their game, building the mental strength of the group, and just having that ability to kind of ride out those purple patches for the opposition. We knew France would have a lot of them, and it's worth underlining that they are a really high quality side. They'll probably feel actually that they left a lot out on the pitch, but they've been on a really incredible trajectory, upwards trajectory. And it was fascinating seeing them up close with their fans in the stadium and the bond they've built there. Obviously, there's a home World Cup to come for them, and it could even be that Ireland play them in a quarter final in Paris. So I think it was a good step that Ireland showed they can compete with and live with France, and will probably feel that game was even there for the taking.
Well, Murphy's Law, get the defeat out of the way now and we'll be all right for the World Cup. We will get on to the couple of other results, because Six Nations, I suppose, as a whole now is wide open in terms of who can actually go on and win it, perhaps without a Grand Slam, of course. But 14 players have been released back to their provinces, and I suppose last weekend was the most, one of the most physically taxing matches, I'd imagine, going over to France as well. So is this a chance for perhaps some of those fringe players to make an impression on Andy Farrell and make an impression on the Irish management team?
Yeah, absolutely. And these guys need minutes. They've been working way hard in training in Ireland camp, but without getting a chance on the pitch for many of them. And the likes of Gavin Coombs and James Hume and Ryan Baird will hope that an impressive performance for their province pushes them back into that Ireland 23. Because, again, the Italy fixture, you can't take it for granted. And Ireland will be keen to keep a lot of their frontliners or perceived frontliners match sharp and match ready with another break weekend beyond it. But it is an opportunity to blood a bit more in your squad, get a bit of that squad development with the likes of Hume and Coombs, who we know have that top level potential as well. So yeah, great for the provinces to get some of their key players back, really. In the meantime, 23-man Ireland squad are going to meet up for 2 days at the end of this week, and a lot of similar faces to the matchday squads in the first two rounds, so probably is an indication that there isn't going to be too much upheaval or too many wholesale changes for the Italian game, but there's definitely scope for a bit of experimentation.
Okay, well, it will be interesting to see how it goes, both for the players returning with their provinces, going well in the URC, and indeed for Andy Farrell in Ireland in the rest of the Six Nations. There were a couple of other matches, of course, at the weekend as well. No Grand Slam for Scotland. Dan Biggar kicking Wales to victory.
Yeah, kind of almost didn't surprise me in the end with Scotland. They had such a good start and they were in a prime position against a kind of wounded Wales side, but just let that opportunity slip. And Biggar showed his class. He's been almost underrated, weirdly, for a guy who's so experienced and has done so much in the game. But you can see his competitive spirit is completely undiminished. Even when they replaced him with a couple of minutes ago, he obviously didn't want to go off the pitch, and he finished with a brilliant line kick down the right-hand side. It was his drop goal that proved to be the winning score. And I know a lot of people felt they should have kept the pressure on there and maybe pushed for a try, but he just felt that the momentum of the game needed that moment where he slots the 3 points. So excellent stuff from him in Wales to respond to a really tough day in Dublin on the opening weekend. They were not good. They were second best physically, and that side of their game really stepped up. Their forwards impressed against Scotland, who had brilliant moments as well. And Finn Russell probably summed up the good and the bad. He had obviously a lovely pass for Darcy Graham's try in the first half, but then his sin binning late on in the game proved to be a really key kind of moment in deciding it. So a tough old day for Scotland, but again, they'll still feel that they're in the hunt. And we knew before this championship that it was going to be quite even across those five teams, and so it has proved to be the case. France obviously really in pole position now, but as I said, the Welsh and Scots will be looking forward to welcoming them.
Yeah, and for Wales, obviously mathematically back in contention, but realistically back in contention?
Yeah, it's a tough one to see given the players they're missing and the quality of teams like France, and you would expect Ireland to bounce back. So can't quite see it at this stage, but we've written off Wales many times before, and they're well aware of that and motivated by that as well.
And Scotland, I suppose, would it be fair to say the biggest frustration surrounding, well, one of the frustrations surrounding Scottish rugby at the moment is the consistency. It's trying to build on such a big victory in the Calcutta Cup the previous week and then to come up short. It's just finding that consistency and finding that momentum.
Yeah, and that's historic in this championship. They just don't tend to back up their big performances.
Why not?
Yeah, I don't fully understand it. I would imagine it's something around the mindset of the players. And if you look at even their regional sides or their club sides, they don't have great success there. They're not used to winning regularly all the time throughout the course of a season. And I think that does stick in your head a little bit. Whereas a team like Leinster, for example, they go through those URC Pro 14 seasons as they were, winning all the time and expecting to win. And even Dan Sheehan actually said it after the match on Saturday in Paris. He said, "I'm not used to coming off the bench when we're not well ahead in games," which is an insight into his mind as a Leinster player. But the Scottish players probably don't have that. They probably look at Irish rugby with a bit of jealousy and think, we have as much talent as those guys, but we haven't got the record. And I think until it changes and those club sides are really successful, it's hard to translate that into the Six Nations.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. It's a really interesting insight. Speaking of number 10s, and we were talking about Sexton and Carberry, Marcus Smith and England and their performance against Italy. Again, it feels like any time Italy take a defeat more than 15, 20 points, all of a sudden it's, well, where's the relegation from the Six Nations, etc., etc. Was this a case of England and Marcus Smith being extremely good, or was it a case of Italy just rolling over?
A bit of both. I thought England were sharper and played with a bit more tempo in their game. Harry Randall came in at scrum half as well, a kind of younger guy who's been really good for Bristol, and Smith obviously has an array of attacking skills. They took their chance as well. They weren't perfect by any means, but it was improved from them. And you saw Alex Dombrand come in, who's been brilliant for Harlequins alongside Marcus Smith. At the same time, Italy did give them opportunities. Even the first try down the left-hand side where Smith combines with Max Malins, it was really poor defence from Italy. Later on in the game, they give up a try with a simple dropped high ball and allowing England to attack off the back of that. So frustrating that Italy had been good, I thought, in the first game against France. They were very competitive. Their defence was strong, to take a step backwards. The relegation thing does come up every year. At the moment, it's a completely unrealistic debate because they are fully in contractually and in terms of revenue with the Six Nations. But it would be great to see them being more competitive week to week. It was tough for them with the 6-day turnaround between the two French and English games. They're really hard fixtures to start. So with a bit of a breather, obviously Irish fans are hoping it's not in round three, but it'd be lovely to see them deliver a really big performance and get close to one of those opposition in the last two rounds.
We're a while yet from previewing the next round of the Six Nations, but is there anything that Irish fans should be concerned with from Italy? Obviously, yeah, they'll look for a response. That's exactly what Eddie Jones brought with this English side. Half a dozen changes and they bounce back from the defeat to Scotland. But I sense that we wouldn't be too worried about Italy at the moment.
No, you'd expect Ireland absolutely to win that fixture and win it well. And as I said, rack up as many tries as possible, because when it comes down to it, it's going to be really close on that final weekend of the Super Saturday of the Six Nations. Italy, they defended better in the French game and they were competitive around the breakdown. They have got a lovely crop of young players, and that's the big hope now. People probably didn't see a huge amount of their under-20s game against England at the weekend. They won 6-0 in that, Italy, which is a brilliant result for them. They actually beat the Ireland under-20s in a warm-up game before the Six Nations, and that's going to be a fascinating battle at that level. And it really backs up some excellent results for the under-20s over the last couple of years from Italy. So that's the great hope, I suppose. It is very difficult for a 19-year-old to go straight from there into a Six Nations campaign. You're actually seeing a lot of young guys in this Italy team. There's a little bit of work to be done with, I suppose, them adapting and physically excelling in senior rugby, but it is great to see those results. So that's the positive side of Italian rugby.
Absolutely, it was great to see that result and a low scoring game there. 51552 is the text line, or tweet us at Game On. Paul in Sligo has texted us and he says, "Murray, I think our under-20s deserve a mention." Well, Paul, I could not agree with you more. Unbelievable ending. We were talking, we will be getting on to GA a bit later in the show, and we'll have Shane McGrath on the hurling and how exciting that was, a finish, and indeed the Gaelic football was at the weekend in Croke Park as well. But Charlie Tector, there's a man now for the future as well. So for those who might be living under a rock and aren't aware, it was Ireland 17, France 16, Ireland clinching it right at the death.
Yeah, an absolute dramatic victory for them. Ben Brownlee scoring the try, and Tector, probably one that he would slot with his eyes closed in the training ground. But when you're under that kind of pressure, you've got to hold your nerve, and he absolutely did that, as did the whole Ireland squad, really, to find that late winning score when they weren't probably fancy to go away to France. It's the first time an Ireland under-20s side has won there since 2012. So it's been a long time waiting for that. And it underlines just how tough it has been. France gave Italy a good beating the weekend before. To be honest, I did not see this result coming. And there hasn't been a lot of expectation around this Ireland under-20s group. Maybe that's helpful. They obviously haven't played a huge amount of rugby given the pandemic over the last couple of years. They've missed out on a lot of their development, and there wasn't a lot of hype around star names, and probably still isn't. But that's one of the strengths of the group, I think. They're really well coached. Richie Murphy, who was formerly with the Ireland senior team, he's gone back as head coach. And now we're seeing guys really deliver their potential, and it's fascinating to watch. It's a really tough to call championship. As I said, England lost to Italy. Wales, who were hammered by Ireland the weekend before, bounced back with a win over Scotland. But Ireland are really in strong contention and in pole position for now.
Yeah, I know you and I have had many conversations about the positivity surrounding Richie Murphy. He's the right man in charge now to hopefully bring this Irish team forward. And indeed, we all talk about the Leinster conveyor belt, but perhaps now we can start a conversation about the Irish conveyor belt and see these players develop and indeed add to the senior team in the years to come.
Yeah, absolutely. And they've drawn from across the country, really. You think of Matthew Devine, the scrum half from Connacht, Ruben Crothers, the captain, who's been really impressive and really mature in the back row. He's at Ulster, and a few more from all the other provinces. It is about an Irish team here, but it's great that there's talent going to, I suppose, filter into all four of the provinces, and long may that continue. It's always been entertaining to watch the under-20s. They play an excellent style of rugby generally. This game was a tough one. There were lots of errors, but again, that Irish resilience in the end game was really impressive.
Absolutely. Well, listen, Murray, I think I've kept you long enough, so let you go home now. Enjoy your Valentine's evening with your wife. A really fascinating chat. I always learn something about rugby when we're having a chat. You're an absolute genius.
Thanks.
So I really appreciate it. But coming up in a few moments' time, I mentioned it earlier about the dramatic ending in Croke Park this weekend, as we will turn our attention to hurling as Ballygunner go gung-ho. Tipi Kilkenny, Galway beat Limerick. Shane McGrath's coming up next. Don't go away.
With Green Farm, being up to 90 isn't real. The protein in our range is. Get real with Green Farm. Real protein, real tasty.
Game on.
Hurling.
Yes, hello again. You're very welcome back to Game On, wherever you are tuning in from. It is great to have your company on this Valentine's evening. And I'm delighted now to welcome onto the show our hurling expert, Tipperary's Shane McGrath. Shane, a fascinating weekend of hurling. And usually, I suppose, the inter-county scene overshadows the club scene. But considering the end to that dramatic final in Croke Park on Saturday evening, I suppose only one place to start, and that is indeed Ballygunner 217, Ballyhale Shamrocks 119. Harry Ruddle, remember the name. He's etched his name into hurling history with a remarkable last gasp winning goal to secure Ballygunner's first ever All-Ireland title, introduced as a 53rd minute sub. I mean, Shane, have you ever seen anything as wild as an ending to a game of hurling as that?
I suppose maybe there was, Shane, but in context of the game, what was at stake? I mean, for any hurler, you know, winning Lee McCarthy or winning an All-Ireland with your county, it's unbelievable, you know. But I think to win an All-Ireland with your club is the pinnacle, like. And in the context of that, what he did was, you know, it really was out the backyard stuff that you dream of doing. But I think you have to admire Ballygunner, Shane, in that while the rest of us might be losing our lives, or while the fans were losing their lives in the stand, if you just watch back the play again, like, they just trusted the process. They trusted what they were about. There was no panic with the ball. You know, I thought Ian Kenny was majorly involved in it, their cornerback. I thought he was outstanding. You know, I know Desi Hutchinson, man of the match, I thought this guy was very, very close to getting it, but there was no panic with the ball, because we've all been in that situation where, you know, we need to get a goal and it's the last play of the game and we just want to lob it in, lump it in and hope for the best. But no, they had two or three passes. Ian Kenny, Peter Hogan gets the ball, no panic, hand passes it to Ruddle at speed, and the run he makes, but even on the movement inside to create the space for Harry Ruddle, a lot of people mightn't realise that. If you were behind the goals on Hill 16, all the players inside, Hutchinson and these guys, they were making space, making moves, so the space opened up for him. And like, what a finish. I feel sorry for Dean Mason. I think he's a serious goalkeeper. I think his view was blocked a little by Richie Reid, but I mean, great strike. What a way to win it, what a terrible way to lose it. But I mean, unbelievable scenes, like, you know, at in Croke Park afterwards.
Yeah, it's 28 minutes past six. I believe our own Marty Morrissey is down to Ballygunner as well, doing a piece for the 6-1. So I can only imagine the parties that are going on down in Ballygunner at the moment, because as we say, you know, they made their own history. And a lot of the narrative, I suppose, in the build-up to the match was Ballyhale going for a historic 3 in a row, and can they be stopped? And Ballygunner dominating Munster for so long. Mentally, how big a victory do you think this will be for Ballygunner and indeed Waterford Hurling, that they've finally gotten over that hurdle of the All-Ireland title and the challenge that brought after going so well in Munster for so long?
This is massive for Waterford Hurling, and I suppose anyone that was watching the Sunday game last night would have seen Derek McGrath talking about it. And like, you know, he, and rightly so, I suppose, he would have taught a lot of them. He knows a lot of them personally. He works with some of them. And you could hear the emotion in his voice, that how much it meant to him or how much this means to Waterford Hurling. Like, I mean, to get to an All-Ireland final as a Waterford team, to beat a Kilkenny team in the manner that they did it, like, it can only give them such belief, you know. And I'm sure Liam Cahill is absolutely thrilled with the result and with the buzz he's going to get off the Ballygunner lads when they do come back into the panel maybe in a couple of weeks' time. And I suppose it was just very fitting that the song that was playing in the speakers at the end of the game was Don't Stop Believing. And we all know that tune, and sometimes that tune is maybe associated with Waterford when they got to the final in 2008 and things didn't work out. But now people in Waterford can associate that song with this Ballygunner team and a Waterford team winning an All-Ireland hurling title on the biggest day in club hurling. And it'll be massive for Waterford going throughout the year, Shane. But I suppose, look, just to quickly touch on Ballyhale, the greatest hurling club team of all time, bar none. That's the first match they lost in knockout championship hurling since October 2017. I mentioned the other evening on the radio what they've won since, but, you know, 4 Kilkenny titles, 3 Leinsters, 2 All-Irelands. They could have easily been going for 4 in a row, as we spoke about the other evening, but, you know, they're only 50 years in existence. What a club. They never said die. They kept going, and it looked like when TJ popped over that point to put them 117 to 114 up coming into the closing stages, everyone thought it was their day. But again, I just go back to that word, the process and the system. Ballygunner trusted it. They didn't panic. There was no panic at all, and they kept tipping away. And I suppose there's a couple of guys, Shane, quickly, if I could touch on.
Yeah.
One guy for me, Páraic Mahony. Now, Desi Hutchison was class, but I thought Páraic Mahony was epic on the freeze. He got taken off the freeze against Loch Neil. And the other guy, Shane O'Sullivan, I would have battled with Shane going back as far as 2006 inter-county, and he's still going well, still going strong. What a warrior he is from, like.
Yeah, absolutely. And we had Stephen O'Keefe on the show as well, kind of doing a preview. And, you know, it just what it means to them. And as you mentioned, there's no higher honour than winning with your parish, with the local club as well. And the host of names that will be going back to Waterford and linking up with Liam Cahill as well. And you've already reeled off so many people. I mean, Desi Hutchinson, 1-3, Mikey Mahoney, Billy O'Keefe, 5 points. So, yeah, no, it was a great performance across the board. And indeed, you do feel sorry for Ballyhale in terms of how the defeat, I suppose, came about, and given how late it was. And we saw the same in the football as well, and we'll be hoping to review the football tomorrow. We'll have a few voices on from the victorious Kilcoo camp. But moving on to the inter-county scene, Shane, and I suppose from Ballygunner we may as well go straight into Waterford. I'm not sure if you could read too much into it. A fairly emphatic victory, 731 to 19 points over Laois. I'm not sure what you learn from a win like that, but also I suppose great to see, besides the scoreline, was the return of Tadhg Na Bhfirce.
Yeah, I think that's the main thing for kind of Waterford and Waterford hurling fans. His first bit of play, I think he won the ball, pinged a pass to someone and set up a point straight away, so he got into the thick of it straight away with his first touch. Look, he's a class hurler, and you just can't put a price or put a value on him at his best if he can get back to his very best this year for Waterford and for Liam Cahill. Like, when he went off in the All-Ireland final a couple of years ago, second time having that injury, in your heart to just go out to him, because he's, you know, obviously such an honest guy, he's worked so hard to get back. But he just plays that role like nobody else in the country can play it for Waterford, the way he cuts off space, his hurling ability, his delivery of the ball, his calmness on the ball when the pressure is highest. And I think if Waterford could take that over, it's that Tadhg Na Bhfirce got on the field, got on a bit of ball and looked comfortable. Like, you know, Stephen Bennett is racking up some ridiculous scores already, you know, in the two games he's played. His confidence will be high as well. You know, he might get a rest maybe the next day, like, you know, and it's good for Liam Cahill that he can maybe do that. You know, they're playing Laois next at home, and he might look at maybe giving some of these guys a rest now because they have their 4 points on the board. But look, I do feel sorry for Laois. It is an awful bit and an awful hammering to get in any game at any level. And it just shows you maybe how far back maybe they are at the moment. They really do need all their top guns on the field, and they don't seem to have all of them at the moment, or Cheddar doesn't have them there, or if he's going to have them for the rest of the year, it's hard to know. But, you know, their next game now, you know, is unfortunately away to Kilkenny, and, you know, that doesn't look too good either, Shane, to be honest. Like,
no, it doesn't. And I know Cheddar was positive after the opening round defeat as well, but to rack up that score, and listen, I suppose Clock Ballycollow done well in the club as well, so there are some positivities to try and take from that, but Cheddar certainly has it all to do with Laois. You mentioned their next match is against Kilkenny. Well, Kilkenny will be coming off the back of a 1-point loss to Tipperary. I'm not sure if you were at it down in Semple Stadium. Obviously, from a positive point of view for Colin Bonner, getting a nice victory over Brian Cody. Jason Ford, 10 points. Jake Morris, I think 1-2. What's the main takeaway from this? Obviously, historically, it's one of the greatest rivalries in hurling as well, and there wasn't much in between it. Certainly not a classic either.
No. Like, I wasn't at it. No, I was actually on duty in Ennis yesterday for Clare and Wexford, so I got home and watched it last night, recorded and watched it, and look, to be honest, I heard some of the comments on it on the first half, and when you have someone like John Milan on the radio and he's finding it hard to get a bit of excitement out of it, you know that the first half was absolutely a dour affair for a typical Kenny game, for any game really. But the second half was definitely much more exciting. Like, what will Tip get out of it? I think Colin Bonner will be absolutely delighted with the way they responded when Kilkenny got the goal. I think Tighe Wyatt got the goal and Patrick Walsh got a point, but Tip responded really, really well after that, rattling off the next four or five scores, and he'll be delighted with that. He'll be delighted with performances of, I suppose, Jason is on great form. He's 21 points scored now in two games, 11 against Laois and 10 yesterday. He's in serious form. Barry Heffernan was really good. Craig Morgan looks really good as well, cornerback. And I suppose one guy, Tip are kind of playing a sharp passing game, Shane, at the moment. I suppose that's where a lot of the frustration, maybe the people watching it, that Kilkenny and Tip were both trying this sharp passing game and it was breaking down. But it's early doors and they have to trust the system no more so than Ballygunner did. But there's one guy, I suppose, in particular that's really benefiting out of that, would be Cathal Barrett. I thought he was outstanding yesterday, and he likes being on the ball. He's a cornerback, but he's comfortable on the ball, and if they want to play it out through the lines, he's definitely someone that they're going to use a lot. So I think Colin Bonner will be delighted with that, to have his 4 points. He's a new manager in. The bar usually is Kilkenny, usually bring the best out of Tip, and Tip bring the best out of Kilkenny. So to get away in that Thurles with a big crowd there, I think it was definitely worth more than the actual 2 points was on show for Colin Bonner. So he'll be delighted, you know, and their next Tip's next game then will be against Dublin at home. So, you know, if they win that, they should be, you know, they should be looking pretty good to try and maybe reach a league final. Like,
yeah, you mentioned it wasn't a great first half. I think from a Kilkenny point of view, I think it was 8 scores from 23 shots as well, so accuracy perhaps missing there, but I'm sure Brian Cody won't be pressing the panic button no matter band, and the bit of experience, it is only the second week, it is only the end of February as well, and of course they will be welcoming the Ballyhale Shamrocks lads back into the fold soon enough as well. So plenty to work on and to move on there. You mentioned Tip playing Dublin. Dublin did have a good victory up in our Antrim, 219-215, but I think it's poignant to just mention the sad passing of Maddie Kenny's mother. So our thoughts and sincere condolences go out to the whole Kenny family. Obviously there are things bigger than hurling at the moment. Cork racked up a big victory against Offaly. I suppose Cork will be looking to come out of the blocks, you know, with that bit of extra hunger, bit of extra bite, considering how last year ended, and Offaly may have a sneaky eye on the Joe McDonagh already. But you were down, as you mentioned, Shane, in Ennis for Clare against Wexford. Wexford 220, Clare 120. So another victory for Wexford. The O'Connor brothers going really well. Darry Egan seems to be seamlessly fitting into the Wexford setup there, and I suppose the players are fitting seamlessly into Darry Egan's plans.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, he really is getting the best out of him at the moment, and you know, even the fans the last day in Wexford Park, you know, there was a massive support there from Wexford Park, and there was a good Wexford following there in Ennis now yesterday as well. And like, Clare, Wexford find it hard to beat Clare the last few years. Now they've bet them twice in the last few years in the league, but in championship encounters, Clare have had their number, I suppose, in the last couple of years. So they wanted to, and I think Dara wanted to go down to prove to everyone that, you know, what they did in Wexford Park against Limerick, that wasn't just, you know, a flash in the pan, that they are a good team. And you know, I mean, he has a very strong spine to his team there. You know, obviously Lee Chin is missing there at the moment. And, you know, Kevin Foley, Sean Murphy seems to have a bad injury. You don't know if he's going to play much this year. But he has these guys to come back. But, you know, the guys he has, there's a real honesty in their performances, in their work rate. The hits that are going in are phenomenal, Shane. Like, Jesus, the size of these guys, Clare and Wexford, all inter-county guys. You know, I genuinely would be afraid nearly to play inter-county hurling at the moment with the way that...
How conditioned
the way
they
these guys are built, like,
yeah.
Oh, it's phenomenal. Will O'Donoghue, these kind of guys. But like, if I say it to you right, there was a very gale force wind there. It was blowing down towards, I don't know what end it's called, but the kind of the old scoreboard end, I suppose, as to our right. Where Clare had 11 wides in the first half with the wind, and they only scored 1 point from play. And against the wind, they had 3 wides, but they scored 8 points from play. So there is a score on goals in Ennis, and it seems to be the one that that was against the wind yesterday. But Wexford had 10 wides then in the second half with the wind. I think Brian Lowen said afterwards, look, the shot selection, well, it was something that's just not good enough at that level. But I think Wexford were definitely worthy winners. As you said, the two O'Connors is between them, I think, scored 114 out of their total. D. O'Keefe got a great goal. Conor McDonald chipped in with a nice couple of scores as well, and these kind of guys. But I just think Clare, they haven't their best team on the field at the moment, Shane. And like, to be honest, some of their best players were actually poking around afterwards in their tracksuits on the field. Like, I was looking out and I seen David McInerney poking around with Peter Duggan. Seen Tony Kelly did the warm up. Shane O'Donnell still has to come back. John Conlon only his first game back. Keane Galvin togged out for the first time yesterday. When Brian Lowen gets all these guys on the field, I think Clare will be a very, very good team. And there's one guy, Patrick Crotty, he came on there yesterday from the Scariff Club. He, you know, the socks, the old school blue socks pulled up to the knees, left-handed. And I just think this guy's going to be a real crowd favourite. You know, he reminds me of Conor Clancy, the Claws, they call him. You know, he used to hurl for Clare in the 90s. And he made a big difference when he came on. And there's a young guy, Shane Meehan, Conor Ford. He's going to be a real handful as the year goes on. And they get him into open space and get a big, good quality ball in with him. So, yeah, I think Wexford definitely worked their win yesterday, Shane. And I suppose a little bit of pressure off them now going up to Salt Hill in a couple of weeks' time, knowing that they don't really have to win. But I suppose it'll allow them to a bit more freedom to go out and express themselves up there, like.
Yeah, absolutely. And Tony Kelly, I think, was reading today that we might see him in the latter end of the leagues. Very briefly, time is against us, unfortunately. You know, I'd chat hurling all evening if I could with you, Shane. But Limerick-Galway, another defeat for Limerick. Galway finishing strongly. Obviously, Grout Hegarty getting the red card. I think Galway got 7 unanswered scores in the end after being 1 down going into the last 10. A lot of positives for Henry Shefflin. And we've seen Fintan Burke with the sidelines from either side. Who needs Joe Canning? But from a Limerick point of view... listen, as I keep emphasising, it is only week two. It is only the end of February. So John Kiely won't be too concerned yet, it's fair to say?
Not at all. Jeez, Shane, not at all. No, I put it to you like this, right? Last year in the league, Limerick played 5 matches, okay? And they lost 2 of them. They drew 1. And they won the last 2 before championship. And for me, that's what it is. That's what Limerick are about, Shane. They're a championship team. Like, if I tell you, like, did they make an improvement from the Wexford game? Massive. They scored 4 points from play against Wexford. They scored 111 from play against Galway there Saturday night. I don't think there's any panic. Again, hasn't all his best players back yet or on the field all the same. I can think that Cork are coming to town in a couple of weeks. I think you'll see a strong Limerick team. You'll see a ferocious intensity in their play. Do they cross the line sometimes? They do, yeah. Did Gerard Hegarty deserve to be sent off? He did. But look, I think if there's a time to get sent off, it's now. They'll regroup, they'll reassess that, and you know, probably won't be an issue for them going forward. So no panic from Limerick. Galway, yeah, great win for him. But look, Henry Shefflin, that's what he's about. He's a winner, and everything he does, he wanted to win the other night. Himself and Kylie had a few words on the sideline, and that's what they are. They're both winners, and they both want to win, regardless if it's the league, a challenge match, opening of a field, anything. These guys just want to win every time they go out, like.
Absolutely. Well, Sinead, that is our GA chat done for today. But fear not, we'll have Ballygunners Desi Hutchinson and Kilcoo coach Conlett Gilligan joining us live tomorrow evening for more reviewing a spectacular weekend. Well, from a spectacular weekend of hurling, it was also a spectacular finish to the Super Bowl. We'll have Jeff Shepherd up next live.
With Green Farm, being flat to the mat isn't real. Our protein is. Get real with Green Farm. Real protein, real tasty.
The man open left. Game on, Iron America.
Yes, hello once again. You're very welcome back to Game On as we turn our attention to American football and we turn our attention to the Super Bowl and I turn my attention to Mr. Jeff Shepherd. Jeff, how are you, sir? Obviously, the LA Rams scoring that late touchdown and clinching the Super Bowl at the despite the gallant efforts of the Cincinnati Bengals. As a spectacle, as the Super Bowl should be, how does this one rank in your opinion?
Well, hey, Shane, you look, you know, I think there was some great moments during the game. It's always great when there's late drama, especially in the Super Bowl. I don't think it was, you know, the greatest game ever played or anything like that. But I think the Rams proved that they were one of the better teams, the best, you know, one of the best two or three teams in all of football all season. They really kind of lived up to the hype. Look, we talked about this late last week as we were doing our preview. They went all in this trade for Matthew Stafford to get him from Detroit. And it was kind of a win-now situation. I mean, they don't have a lot of – they've given up a lot of draft picks. Some of their older, better players are talking about retiring now. They were kind of a win-now mode where the Bengals have a much clearer future is what it would seem like. And I think the big thing to take away, too, is Cooper Kupp, the wide receiver, just proved yet again – he should have gotten a whole lot more consideration for the Most Valuable Player Award in the league. He got the Most Outstanding Offensive Player, but, I mean, he was just phenomenal in stepping in and filling in the shoes after Odell Beckham Jr. got hurt. He just proved how valuable he really is to this Rams team.
Absolutely, and I know we were kind of chatting before and over the weekend. I suppose this is Matthew Stafford straight to the Hall of Fame now, booking his place already. He's already etched himself in as one of the greats in this performance alone.
You know,
I like the big old players, Jeff.
Sure, and look, he played, you know, in Detroit, and they made the playoffs a couple different times, but they were pretty bad a lot of the years that he played there. But he always consistently put up really good numbers. I mean, he threw the ball. He's always thrown the ball really well. I mean, getting a Super Bowl, though, it just validates everything that you do in your career. Now, look, there's been some guys that have, you know, kind of, I don't want to call them flukes, but they probably weren't, you know, really big Super Bowl-worthy type quarterbacks. Stafford has now put himself in position, you know, that he's a Super Bowl champion now. And they look, who knows to say if they can't get another one next year or something like that. But yeah, I mean, he's going to wind up with you know, tons of yards and tons of records, and you get that Super Bowl, it just separates you a little bit more from some other great quarterbacks that maybe never got over in the big game.
Absolutely, and I suppose this as well, you're talking about validating Stafford's kind of arrival at the franchise, and I suppose this victory almost vindicates the Rams' decision to return to LA from St. Louis 6 years ago.
Yeah, and look, there's a whole lot going on with the Rams and the league and the city of St. Louis. There's lawsuits being filed, but I mean, look, if you want to be a conspiracy theorist about it, if you followed, you know, this show long enough and followed American football, you know, the Rams were the beneficiaries of a call a couple of years ago against the Saints and made it to the Super Bowl, and they didn't win. They lost to the Patriots. It seems like they've been trying to make football a thing in Los Angeles. And I saw a great tweet last night, and it said Rams fans are saying, if we win, this would be great. And Bengals fans are saying, if we win, my grandfather's soul will be redeemed. You know, like it just meant more to the Bengals fans, I think. And I think they had more fans in the stands, you know, that traveled from Ohio, that went out to Los Angeles. You know, they had the celebrities, they had all that stuff. I think it meant more to the Bengals in general, but I think the league's probably a little happy that the Rams won this game.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, credit to the Bengals. I mean, what, they were, I suppose, the worst NFL team 2 years ago, and getting to a Super Bowl is a great achievement as well. And I know we touched on it in the preview as well. Unfortunately, time is very against us, Shep, but 36 years of age, 20 days, Sean McVay, the youngest head coach to win a Super Bowl. Just very briefly, what an achievement for him.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they lost it a couple of years ago. He's back in it. I mean, he has been an offensive guru and highly regarded, you know, in this league for a lot of years. And for him to get it, I mean, again, it does the same thing. It puts him – there have been a lot of great coaches in the NFL that have never won a Super Bowl, and it just puts him in a different level. He's going to be thought about differently moving forward. Think about John Madden, who just passed away this year. You know, he won the Super Bowl and retired when he was like 42 years old, and the guy is a legend. You know, I mean, everybody knows who he is all around the world because of that video game. I'm not saying McVay's going to be at that level, but it just gives you a little something extra when you're talking about the greats.
Absolutely. Stafford, Cup, McVay, the Rams. What a weekend it was. And Shep, unfortunately, we're going to have to cut our conversation short, but it's been an absolute pleasure. It was an absolute excellent Super Bowl, and it's been a pleasure chatting to you throughout the course of the season. I'm sure we'll catch up again soon.
Appreciate it, Shane. Thanks, buddy.
Well, from American football to association football, Alan Colley will be live in studio in a few moments' time. Stay with us. 2FM.
Game on 2FM. With Green Farm, rise and grind and the hustle mindset aren't real. The protein in our chicken and turkey is. Get real with Green Farm. Real protein, real tasty. Game on football.
Yes, you're very welcome back to Game On this Monday evening. I'm Shane Dawson and I'm delighted to be in the company of Alan Colley as we turn our attention to football. Alan, great to have you in studio. Before we get on to the weekend's Premier League action, you were in Tallaght Stadium on Friday evening to see Shamrock Rovers defeat St Patrick's Athletic in the President's Cup. 1-1 after 90 minutes and Rovers eventually won 5-4 on penalties. As a spectacle, what did you make of the match?
That evening, Shane, I enjoyed the game. Probably wasn't the best first half we've ever seen, but to be fair to the players, obviously it's still only pre-season. They're fine-tuning, Shane, and also the fact that the weather conditions weren't the kindest to the players. It was very windy and blustery throughout, which is probably the worst conditions for a footballer, as many people will know when they are playing. They would much prefer even rain and the pitch being wet rather than the wind, and Tala can be like that. But the second half certainly livened up a little bit more, a bit more goal-mouthed action. That man Owen Doyle opened the scoring for St Pat's, and I think he'll have a huge influence on this team throughout the year. Obviously we all know about his exploits over in the UK and the experience that he brings, but to open his account as well in Tala, I think that'll bode well for St Pat's going forward, because I think he's going to be a big influence on the team. Shamrock Rovers got to grips with the game then in the second half when they started to make a couple of substitutions. They brought on Burke, Gaffney, Richie Towell. It just goes to show the strength and depth that they have when you're bringing on those substitutions, Shane. And they made a big difference. And once they got a hold of the game in the second half, they started to take over. The equaliser was fortunate enough, it was a mistake from the young goalkeeper. And eventually it obviously petered out to 1-1 draw and finished off on penalties. I think St Pat's deserved to win. They were the better team on the night. I was very impressed with them. I was unsure on my way up just in terms of how they would fare out because of obviously the loss to new players. There was a big turnover of players and staff as well with the new manager coming in, Tim Clancy. But I was very, very impressed with them, Shane. I thought they played really well. Of course, Shamrock Rovers have loads of quality and there'll be loads to come from them. Still the firm favourites and rightly so to win the league. But I think overall it was a good night. There was a huge crowd. There was over 5,000 people at it. Brilliant atmosphere. And it's looking, everybody looking forward to Friday night's kickoff now.
Absolutely. I suppose Shelburne fans might be a bit worried considering the form that Owen Doyle showed there, but obviously from a Rovers point of view, Jack Byrne returning, Alan Manus returning, and a penalty shootout victory. So they've the first bit of silverware for the season as we look ahead to the League of Ireland Friday. The Premier League at the weekend, I feel all our conversations now are focused around Manchester United and their attitude of the players and the management. So 1-1 at the weekend, and I suppose the current narrative now is Rangnick wants Ten Hag, the players want Pochettino, the summer targets. I mean, is there anything that we can add to the just absolute mess in Manchester at the moment?
Yeah, well, I don't think the players should ever dictate who the manager should be. So, and if that's where you're, if that's your starting point, you're on a loser straight away, Shane, and that should never be the case. That should obviously be the powers that be, but they've gone through so many managers, and as you said, look at the problems that they've encountered along the way, and here we are in a bit of a mess. I watched the game on Saturday. Southampton were the better team. They should have won, particularly in the second half, and I think a lot of credit must go to Southampton. They were absolutely brilliant. And if you're speaking about managers, Shane, in terms of who might take over at Man United, I think Hasenhüttl might have put himself into the frame as well. Might be a bit of a dark horse for the job, but I thought his team played ever so well, and obviously he's working off far limited resources and budget at Southampton, but always does a good job, and his team played really, really well. Man United's problems, I think it's got to the stage, we've been through the managers, the players have to take responsibility now, Shane. And as I mentioned here in the last couple of weeks, at what point does personal pride or professional pride kick in? Because they still have enough players and quality, you would think, on the pitch, regardless of who the manager is, to maybe instruct themselves or what they want to do, or get the job done and get the victories. And if you go back to it, since Ragnick has taken over, I know they've picked up the odd win here and there at the start. It hasn't been the case in the last few matches, but they haven't played anyone of note. So I would fear for them when they play, obviously, the top team, Shane. Southampton and West Ham have probably been the best of what they played so far. But wait till they start playing against the likes of Liverpool and City and the top teams. That's when you'll see exactly just where, how far they've fallen, as we all know, and the problems that they have. So there's huge problems for Man United. They don't seem to be going away. If anything, as you rightly say, they're getting worse. And what manager out there would want to inherit kind of the group? Because to me, the group doesn't look like the nicest bunch of lads in the world when they're trying to throw every manager they have under the bus at every opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a tough fight for the top four as well. And you mentioned Hasan Hüttl, obviously familiar with Rangnick, and they're on and off the pitch as well. So we'll be interesting to see in terms of summer targets, if they get Declan Rice, if they bring in Nkunku or whoever that they do go for. But I suppose Liverpool 1-0...
They made heavy weather of it.
Yeah, like a convincing win, probably not, but title race now hopefully back on.
Yeah, and at the business end, nobody will remember that result or that performance, should I say, come the end of the season if they were still close with City. So it's all important just to get the job done, get the victories. Obviously, Salah's back, Mane's back. There's a bit of competition now with Luiz, the new signing, and Jota as well. So for the first time, they have options in that front part of the pitch as well, which will stand them in good stead going into the latter end of the season, because they're still firing on all fronts in the competition. So I think it is, I won't say it's back on, but I think it's still alive, Shane, very much so. But they must win the game in hand. If they get it to 6 points, I would give them a chance, a real good chance, because they still have to play City. And as I say, all the players appear to be fit. They're only going to get better now with the games coming, obviously ticking fast, and they have options in that front part of the pitch. So I think the title race is very much alive.
Absolutely, and the race for the top four is very much alive. Leicester, West Ham, a 2-2 draw. Spurs going down 2-0 at home to Wolves. But I like to finish with a bit of an Irish connection. Jamie Coleman on the score sheet. Everton 3-0 winners over Leeds. Great to see Coleman add with a goal.
Yeah, he still keeps producing, Seamus, and obviously we gave a lovely mention to Wezzo last week, and he was gone viral at his little shimmy overnight as well, Shane, on Twitter. But I think Seamus, to be fair, at the level that he's been playing at for so many years now, and the consistency year in, year out, and obviously so many managers coming and going, but they always still go back to Seamus and rely on Seamus. Such a brilliant professional as well, and a brilliant ambassador for Irish football, really, in all that he's done and all that he's achieved. So great to see him getting on the score sheet also.
Absolutely, and Liam Scales, I think, got a cracker.
A
for
cracker
Celtic
of a goal,
well,
yeah, and doing very well, Liam Scales, doing really well.
Absolutely. Well, Sinead, that is it for Monday evening on Game On.